away, gentle. Pet Shop Boys on Radio 3, and a cool new one from Ringo Starr and Molly Tuttle to kick us off. That was called Look Up. Look Up. It's Maurice Misolowski, live from St Kilda. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday, Maurice. I wanted to talk a little bit about ageing today, but not really in a scientific way. I saw some nonsense on Facebook the other day about, is it Gen X's? When they're 60, they look 40. It was all that kind of stuff. And how come the more recent generations don't? And then I'm thinking, well, how come when we watch old 1960s and 50s movies, one, all the acting superstars, they actually were a lot older. And also, people seemed to kind of look older than they actually were. I mean, all of the above.
Yeah, all of the above are absolutely right. In the 1960s, being 60 was old.
Yeah.
I mean, really old. Like, God's waiting room old. It was just the way that we saw the world. The world was very, very different in a cultural sense, but also in a demographic sense.
Oh, yeah.
The reality was that our medicine, the way we looked after ourselves, the way we repaired the body, is nothing like it is today. And literally, I mean, our organic body is really meant to stop working around 40s and 50s as we were created, which is why we can have children in our early teens. Physiologically, these things are possible because by the time we're 30 or 40, mm-hmm. we're meant to be grandparents and we're meant to be on the way out, literally, if we're going back thousands of years of history and humanity and how long we lived and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Very, very few of us, unless you were noble, unless you had lots of food, unless you had better sanitary conditions, you really carked it by the time you were 50 or 60.
What if you weren't meant to be all the things you've just said? It's just that the things that kept us alive hadn't kind of been developed yet. Nutrition,
well,
and blah, blah, blah.
They hadn't, and we really didn't care for our bodies in the same way. That didn't mean we didn't care. It just means we didn't care for our bodies in the same way. If you go back literally only 100, maybe 120 years ago, if you were ill, you went to the barber.
Yeah.
Because the barber was the dentist, yeah. And was often the surgeon and was often the person who told you what was wrong, or you literally went to one of those snake oil people that came around, you know, from village to village. All those things seemed like they were part of a movie or a novel, mm-hmm. but they were the ways that medicine was told to us, given to us and shared. And the other stark reality is that until recently, and even not now, but until recently, medicine wasn't well distributed, meaning that those that could afford it, those that had access, those that knew, could find it in whatever method it was around and for whatever purpose. But the vast, vast majority of people just didn't even think about going to a doctor or getting things fixed. It just wasn't possible, too expensive, not the way things were. And we just age, we just let our body age.
I see. Well, we're only really talking about 60, 65 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if perhaps it was what people put on those bodies that weren't very flattering a lot of the times. Maybe it was partly that, partly the nutrition, partly that there was no exercise culture, was there?
It was starting, but again, not for everybody. People, exercise culture is a luxury, and I mean that in the sense that if everything else in your life is difficult, then exercise might not be the thing that's a priority.
That's
and that's generally what I mean by that statement. You know, we were coming out of the World War. I know by the 60s we were well out of it, but still we were on the end of that coming out of the war. People were still battening down, still trying to, you know, get their lives back on track. And again, we didn't have this culture. We really saw 60s, 70s, most cultures, I must say Asian, not necessarily true, because they were much better of being inclusive of older people. They were part of the family. They lived with part of the family. They were they were seen as wise, and they were revered and should be. But I'm talking about our Western society where that wasn't true, where in many ways the family didn't want to look in the mirror and see themselves when they were older, so they pushed people to a side. Not. And also there just was a general sense of us, our lives diminishing after we got to 60 or 70. The pension kicked in around the early 60s, mid-60s. You had to give up work in the early 60s or before, especially if you were a woman and you managed to work. I'm going back, you know, 20, 30 years. You had to give up work by the time you were 60. It was all about that diminishing capacity. And today it's the exact opposite. It's a very, very different generation that's aging than the one before.
Well, I want to just address this Gen X thing. Again, it's just nonsense I've been reading about, but it does make you sort of think. So one, for instance, why does the late Generation X or Zennial, 1974 to 81, usually look younger? And there are tons of articles like this. Now, of course, Gen Xers always think that's a very cool thing. But is there anything in it?
Yeah, absolutely. They really were one of the first generations that were brought up with trying to look younger from the moment they were born. They were already being sold to, marketed to, with all sorts of products that would help you. They were also, interestingly, the first male generation that were brought up with this possibility. Prior to that, I was actually talking to somebody only yesterday about this.
Yeah.
If you'd said to a male, you know, a teenager 20 years ago,
yeah,
go out and buy some cream, you know, use some nail polish, look after yourself, do all that, they would have. I mean, the words they would have said would have been expletives.
I know exactly.
Not for me. And today, it's part of their regime, part of their thinking, part of normality, which is a great thing. And that's a big difference too, that the excess that this Gen X has had to all this kind of thinking.
You know something? I remember when I was at school, one of my teachers said he grew up in a rough part of England, and he said, you know, if you'd go to a pub and you'd order a half pint, you'd get into trouble for that. Also, if you sat down while drinking that half pint, you could get duffed up.
Yeah. I mean, we're really talking about a macho image here.
It is.
It really did portray itself until, I think, only 10, 15 years ago is when it started to melt away completely.
Yeah.
But the generation you've just said, you know, these millennials, were brought up where this was all possible, where they saw their parents and their grandparents taking much better care of themselves. Their parents often were already into some kind of a fitness regime. Remember, we're talking 80s and 90s here. We're not talking today. But they were into some kind of fitness regime. They were most probably doing things to enhance their health and their longevity. They just saw this as being normal. So they grew up seeing this and mirroring it. And when they began to think about their own health and well-being, they not only thought about what they can do, but interventions they could use.
There's tons of stuff about this. It's fascinating reading. I've just randomly picked up an article from a women's magazine online in front of me, and the lady who's written it, actually, no, it's a bloke. He says, why Gen Xers like me are the youngest old people. We're far less spoiled, fragile or easily offended. He says, being made to negotiate boredom fostered invention and creativity while instilling in us Gen Xers that life doesn't always go our way. Is that waffle?
Yeah, pretty much.
There's tons of it out there.
I think if you go back and you look at the carvings on the rock walls millions of years ago, their parents would have said something about the same the kids that were around them in the cave too. It's pretty much whatever generation says about the one before and the one after.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be some truth. He wrote it. I'm sure it's his truth and lots of people's truth, but as a generation, not necessarily.
I'll tell you one. Here's one that Jared will love, because one of the things here in this article says, I'm glad that Gen X is one of the youngest old people, one of the last batch to have fully come of age in analog.
I don't even know if they remember it, truthfully.
Tapes, you know. Technology, I wonder if that's got something to do with it, because people do hold analog very close to their chest, some people.
They do, and a lot of them will have nostalgia for it, but I still think it's the baby boomers and the generations before that truly do. These millennials may have had the toys, because that's all they would have had, the children's toys, young adult toys, and all of the what we would now call early day technologies, the Game Boys and those kinds of things they carried around.
They're like Walkman. Things now, aren't they?
The yellow one. Do you remember the yellow Walkman?
Yeah.
They had the earphones on. They had the extended earphones. They were really, I mean, you arrived if you had one of those and walking around with it. They had the cassette in it.
I'll tell you what. The reason I bring up A Trip to the Past, first of all, because we are only talking about 60 years. And I think if you go back and watch any old black and white comedies from the 1960s, you will see that people who are considerably younger than us look like old gits. So I want to extend this forward and say, if it's only been 60 years since that, what do you see as the future?
Totally different. What we have now is a culture where we are into wellness, not health. The difference being that health is when we wait for something to break down, we repair it, which is traditionally what we did with medicine. And we're now very much into wellness, which is we want to stop it from breaking down. We're willing to intervene with diet, with medicine.
Is that key?
Maybe medicine.
Is that really key to this?
Yeah, it is. It's a huge cultural shift. There's also the big difference that what you're describing in the 1960s, those who were already old,
they were what was
called the builder generation. And they were around at the war. Their view on life was that, again, by 60, their life was pretty much, you know, it had done what it needed.
Is it like think it and make it so? You've come...
And again, the culture around them was supporting that. So what you were seeing, especially in the movies, which is true of movies always, is it's showing what popular culture thought and how pop culture acts. And we were seeing representations of people actually getting old, not being so competent, not being so, you know, possible to walk around. They just seem to appear to be aging.
So much of this is avoidable, isn't it? Do you think it was back then?
It wasn't, but it is. Okay. It is now. The other big, big difference is that what we're describing today as people who are in that ageing bracket, which are predominantly the boomers, baby boomers, those born after World War II through to early 1960s, is that they are the first generation, literally, that demanded assistance, that could afford assistance, could get help and could get intervention. They didn't see that they owed the world anything, but the world owed them. And this isn't good or bad, but it means when it comes to aging, we actually put our hand up and we say, look, I'm not as well as I was yesterday. This hurts me. This isn't right. This doesn't feel right. We didn't wait until it was so compounded, which is what would have happened before, that we had no choice. And this is not everybody, I understand. But the generation is now willing to look for help. And the other big, big difference is that this whole field called gerontology.
That's right.
That's a scientific medical term, gerontology. And there are gerontologists who just work in this space, which is that ageing space. That is now a complete science that has so much money put into it. And the only reason it has money put into it now is because baby boomers who have been around and who are ageing now have money to spend on this and to say to scientists, go and figure out this thing about, you know, this well I've always wanted to take water from that would keep me alive forever.
So going even further forward, Morris, basically we are looking to a complete game changer because people will physically be younger. They will because we haven't touched about the mental side of things, how you think about stuff. They will mentally be younger. So what's the knock on?
Well, the reality is that many people will have over the next decade or so the ability to live to 100, 120.
Cool.
I'm not talking so much about people that are already in their 60s, 70s, although we wish them good health and may they, but those who are now in their 20s, 30s, 40s will start to see life quite naturally be to somebody who lives to 100 in relatively good health.
Functionally, though, yeah.
Yeah. And we're not, the anecdote I like around this is that not too long ago, I know the Queen's long gone, may she rest in peace, but the Queen used to hand sign every letter that she sent to somebody who was 100 years old.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing. And she would sit down, this is in her anecdotal notes, I never spoke to her, she never told me, but something I read, true or not, she would sit down once a week and she would hand sign these things because there were so few of them. About 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, she started to get a stamp for them and they started to get electronic because more and more people turned 100. She still wanted to do it, but she couldn't do it anymore physically. That's the big difference. People now are invariably living longer in better health. At the beginning of last century, the average Australian lived to about late 60s, early 70s. And now it's literally the average Australian lives to about mid-80s, early 90s.
So looking forward, Morris, what do you think will fundamentally change? I mean, I know you've done some work on this. Fundamentally change in society because people are far more functional for longer.
The demand to live longer, and that's the big difference. The demand and the capacity. We're looking at trillions, and that's not an exaggeration, trillions of dollars being spent in this field now of people being able to live longer. Most of, and they are, the white men who have made a lot of money, including the Zuckerbergs, including Elon Musk. I mean, literally all of those people.
Do you see them living a long time?
But they're now spending billions and billions of dollars through their trusts, not for their health and well-being. Of course, they want it for them, but for this whole area. The other thing is it's so commercially rich that there is so much money to be made in this space that you've got big pharma coming into it. You've got all of the, you know, all of the creams and all those companies.
How much of the voodoo element, if you like, is still, you know, the snake oil element is still pervasive?
Look, honestly, I think some of that's in there. They're all supposed to be FDA approved. They're all supposed to go through government control. But a lot of the creams, potions and things we buy over the counter don't require medicine. Just they have some story and we believe they'll do it. A lot of that doesn't really stand up to a whole lot of scientific rigour.
But it gets on the shelves. That's always puzzled me.
Yeah, and I'm always amused when you see these wonderful scientific commercials on television that represent these things where they show you big scientific words that nobody can read.
Exactly.
And they show you layers of skin and all these things happening with arrows and other things, skin plumping up and whatever. When you actually boil that down, if you're ever bored enough to do it, look up the actual words they use and what they're telling you.
Yeah.
And it means nothing, absolutely means nothing when you actually take it and turn it into plain English.
I mean, a complete sidebar. I wonder what kind of renaissance the advertising industry has gone through and will have to go through because it can't allow just crummy stuff to go on the market. It just doesn't work unless rules in various countries vary.
It does. But another quick point on that is that this is what fascinates me. When I started my career in the 80s and 90s, nobody advertised to somebody who's over 55. All the advertising was for under 55s.
Makes sense.
Now what you're finding is literally only the last 10 years that advertisers have realised that the silver spoon, you know, those the silver fox or silver spoon, they have all kinds of names, but those over 60 or so have a whole lot of money that they're still willing to spend, still have 30, 40, 50 years of spending ahead of them. They're not keeping it for their kids. They're spending it themselves. And you'll see a lot of advertising now going towards those over 50s. That's been a big shift too, and only in the last 10 years or so.
We haven't talked about the heavy scientific side of this, and with 1 minute to go, we can't really. But things like stem cell treatment, is that really going to
go places? It's going to be huge. There's going to be a whole lot of interventions that we can do. There's a whole lot of stuff that's really just sitting there on the horizon waiting for its efficacy, which means to be proven, for it to go through all the rigor of research. The next 10 years is literally going to be a boon for longevity, and I still believe that many people will have the ability to live relatively good health, definitely 90s, moving into 100 over the next decade or two.
That would be noticed by people doing statistical surveys.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Nice one, Morris. Thanks. I've been waiting to talk to you about that. Have a good time, Grandad, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now. Good on you. Morris Misolowski, live from Australia.